Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch a Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that stands head and shoulders above all other Medicare podcasts. Killing people softly with his song, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello and welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, episode number 53, being recorded on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th of 2020. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm so pleased to be able to welcome you into our classroom, our gathering place, our clubhouse, where we might have a little fun and we might throw around a little Medicare knowledge. I want to say thank you to my nephew, Drew McMillan, our announcer par excellence, who performs his magic at the beginning of every one of our episodes, completely free of charge. That's the magical part of his trick. I don't know, every day when I go to the mailbox, I cringe a little bit until I make sure that there's no invoice from Drew McMillan Enterprises. He is the host of a Canadian television show called Powerboat TV, and you can watch the episodes he's in at powerboattv.com. It's all things boating and trucking to pull the boats and the trailers to pull the boats on, and there are occasionally scantily clad ladies in bikinis on the show, but more importantly, it's all about boats and the power that makes them go. And Drew is a fantastic co-host on that show, but more importantly, he is a free announcer for us, and that's the way I like it. So, the Lazy Man, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Who is that lazy man? That is any man or woman who has to learn about Medicare because of advancing age, but they don't want to. And frankly, they're confused. They're not happy about having to learn about Medicare. So, along comes Doug Jones to help them through this difficult time in their life and the easiest and most painless way possible with the help of his loyal sidekick, Randy Carson. Hiya, Randy.
Doug, what's going on up there in the high altitude, you know, in the thin air of Cave Creek?
Well, you're going on right now. You got it all going on.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We're just trying to get some Cinco de Mayo food rounded up here since we're still in the middle of the we can't serve you in our restaurant concept of the COVID-19.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that fun? Well, I don't know how you're going to do it if you don't get somebody to rustle it up for you in your own kitchen.
Well, we are considering going and ordering and then standing, you know, not standing in a line, but, you know, sitting in our car and waiting for them to bring it out to us in the car, which they will do. But problem with that is once you get it home, you really had to want it because it's either cold and you have to reheat it or you just power your way through it.
Aren't there a lot of people who would eat it in the car right there?
Yes.
What do we call those people? Slobs? I don't know. It just seems like that would be a solution.
I haven't really. It's funny you say that because I haven't actually eaten a meal in my car since I was in college.
Well, it used to be considered fun back then. Let's go to the drive-in.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in my case, I had very minimal time in between classes.
Uh-huh.
And I had to grab something, run to my, you know, I have to drive, grab it, get in my car, shove it down my pie hole as quickly as possible, and then get to my next class. So okay. I really began to work on my skills as a speed eater.
I see. I gotcha. Well, we had a drive-in in our town, and during one of the times I spent a semester suspended or flunked out of college and I'd be hanging around the town, that was the place where all the kids with the cool cars would meet and hang out, and all the girls that liked the kids with the cool cars would meet and hang out, and it became just a clubhouse. It was all outside, and there was always a smell of burning rubber in the air and the noise of screeching tires and so forth, and the occasional broken oil spot where a piston went down through an oil pan or something because some kid tried a little too hard to make some noise with his car. But all
watch
in all,
this.
It was, yeah, exactly. Hold my beer.
I can lay rubber all the way down Main Street and a couple pistons.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I did that once and wound up blowing a rear main seal. And, Jesus. But the whole thing is that the owner of that place decided that he was going to turn it into a real restaurant. And so the stands that had the menus on them and the call button for the car hop to come out and the flashing light for the tray pickup, those stands became superfluous, and he sold them to some company somewhere. And my brother happened, this is in the like early 80s, my brother happened to be driving by the place, and he stopped in, and he was a broke college student, and so he talked the contractor into letting him have one of those things, and he gave it to me for Christmas.
Oh, and my God.
So now it's been refurbished, and we've still got the 19... The prices were probably published on plastic inside this thing in 1958. And so you get a big old California burger with fries for $3 or a wop slop. We used to call it an Italian beef sandwich for like $1.50.
Yeah.
And people will go walk around car shows. I have set this thing up at car shows in front of my car. They will look at the car, and then when they see this menu, they'll just gather around and say, oh, my God, this is just like what we had in our town.
Well, yeah.
It's never-ending.
Like, you remember those gas pumps where you had to pump them, and then the gas went up in the glass dealy?
No, I'm not that old. What the heck are you talking about?
I'm that old. I think the reason I saw those is that a lot of the farmers, back in the Midwest and ranchers where I'm from, they took those as, secondhand items off the gas stations when they were trying.
Well, there you go.
And then they hooked them on their tanks out on the ranch, and then they used them out there. But you would pump the gas up into the glass measuring beaker,
right,
or whatever
right.
the hell you call it. And then you'd pump it up there, get 10 gallons or whatever the hell it was, and then put it into your tank.
Well, I always heard about those, but I think you're right. They were obtained by the farmers, and since they were never going to break, they were in use far longer than one might expect. We always had, I worked in gas stations starting when I was in high school and all the way through college, and I never needed anything that primitive, but my parents always had in-ground gas tanks, and they always had motorized pumps too. I never used one of those things where you pump it up into the globe and then let it trickle out into the car.
It's quite an experience. So given the fact that you have some experience, selling gas and selling oil and slinging rags around a gas station, I always wondered, were you back in the era where everybody got their windshield washed?
Absolutely. And if you didn't, somebody was going to tell you about it. And not only that, but a lot of guys just checked the oil and did things without being asked. Without asking the owner of the car. I would always ask first, because there's that small fraction of people that get a little perturbed when you're taking too long. And so they're sitting in the car waiting for you to finish. And my approach was, let me do whatever you want, but let me ask first so we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd see other guys who felt like they were doing a good job just by, I'll check the oil, and now I'll go around and check all four tires, which takes another 10 minutes. And
Yep.
So yeah, but it was always full service. And when that came to an end, the catalyst for that ending was the Arab oil embargo in, I think, 1974. I went home for Christmas, I was living in Arizona, but the family and I went back to Illinois and probably were there a month, came back to Arizona, and all hell had broken loose in the gasoline retail industry.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of gas stations closed. A lot of gas stations were open for a few hours a day. The guy who owned my gas station was really smart. He put up big yellow sawhorses, these barricades around and near the pumps, in front of the pumps where people driving by on Alvernon, Alvernon Boulevard, I think it was, and Speedway Boulevard, busy intersection. And so people would see those barricades and just not bother to come in and get gas, because regular customers would drive in and say, "Oh man, are you out of gas?" And he'd say, "Not for you." And
not
so
for
he
you.
Always he was always open. Yeah. And the regular customers always got the gas they wanted, and we employees, of course, got all the gas we wanted. But it changed marketing of gasoline in the United States forever.
Yeah, I can remember vividly. You know, we talk about the price of gas nowadays. When I was, you know, like a kid, you know, 5, 6 years old, I can vividly remember my dad every Saturday night when we were in town. We'd come in to buy groceries and visit grandma and grandpa and, you know, that kind of thing. That's what you do when you live on a ranch 25 miles out of town. So anyway, we'd come in on a Saturday night and dad would fill up the truck or car, whatever we were driving. Keep in mind, the gas was like 22 cents a gallon now. Going, I'll take, give me $5 worth.
And you probably collected green stamps too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that would fill up anything you had, 20 cents a gallon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we always had, I got so many stories come to mind. I got to decide which ones the audience won't string me up about when they have to sit through them. But it was, you always had to fill up the gas. I remember I drove to Florida with my grandparents once. It took in a Lincoln Continental, a yellow Lincoln Continental 57. And God, it took forever to get there. No interstates. And this went on for 5 days. My grandfather had all of the pension business for all of the chambers of commerce in the United States. And so every time we'd stop for gas, which was often in a big old Lincoln Continental, my grandmother would sit in the passenger seat looking pretty. He would get out and take his big bulging briefcase to the phone booth, and he would call the local Chamber of Commerce office and talk to them enough to justify to the IRS that blah, blah, you know, and this is all deductible. I was visiting my clients all the way down through the United States. And then the clerk, the gas pump jockey, would come with the little clipboard with the credit card, the credit card paper. And there'd be one to sign, and there'd be a carbon copy underneath. So my grandmother would sign Irene B. Bean, and then she would hand the clipboard back to the pump jockey, and he would give her a card and her copy of the receipt. And then she would reach over to the driver's side and lean on the horn and just lay on that horn until my grandfather ended his business call, came out, "What are you doing that for?"
We knew the conversation was over.
Yeah. Will you stop doing that? Let's go. I'm tired of sitting here. And so we're off again.
Tell me again what your grandma's first name she went by.
Dickie.
Dickie Bean.
She was born in, and the year is lost in the mists of time. There's a whole story behind that. But in 1898, she was born in Fort Worth, Texas. And the family, her father was a newspaper publisher, and her family had horses, and I guess race horses, among other things, thoroughbreds, and so, or quarter horses, I don't know. But the groom that took care of the horses came up and knocked on the door the night she was born and told Mr. Bean that his favorite racehorse, Dick, had died. And Mr. Bean said, "Well, we have a brand new daughter in the house, so I'm sorry to hear about Dick, but here's our, you know, our new daughter has come to be born tonight." And the groom said, "You gots to name that child Dick. You gots to name that child Dick." And so from there on, she was Dickie Bean, or Dick. Dick Battle or Dickie Battle until she got married, and then it was Bean the rest of her life.
I love those stories.
Yeah, and that groom never knew that he'd named a woman who a baby who grew up to be a woman with a strange nickname that people would be explaining decades after her death.
He would be explaining, "Tell me how you got that name." You know, she should have just had it printed up on a little pamphlet.
Yes, read this card. You'll know everything you need to know.
You'll know everything you need to know. And, oh, by the way, there's no quiz afterwards.
Yeah, right. So, Anyway, I didn't think up, Mary Jones thought up something that I thought might be kind of fun. Kind of a group participation element today of our Medicare studies. I mean, you know, call the meeting to order here. And I asked Mary today what we should talk about during the podcast. And she said, well, you could talk about this. And I said, no, that's stupid. And she said, well, you could talk about that. And I said, please, come on, don't insult my intelligence. How about the audience? They're never going to sit through that. And then she said, well, how about a list of the best things about Medicare? And I said, well, that's fantastic. I said, there must be 1,000 of them. And so this is going to be a list of the 1,000 best things about Medicare. But I knew I wouldn't be able to come up with 1,000 things on my own, so I asked Randy to help me out here. So he and I are going to read from our list. Now, I don't know how many things Randy thought up, and we probably have some duplication, but how do you want to do this? Do you want to alternate items, or do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first? How do you want to do it?
Let you go first, because my list is still evolving.
Okay. Does that mean you have nothing on your list?
That would mean that I'm... Yes, that's exactly what that means.
I was really hoping to take a break. You look so comfortable all the time. You know, when I'm yakking and you're just sitting back and your eyelids are getting heavy, because every time I say Medicare, they get a little more closed. And then I was hoping to enjoy that experience today while you shared some of the burden, but I guess that's not going to happen.
I was gonna write some things down, but I work best extemporaneously.
Well, that's right, and you are very good at that, so I can't argue. All right, so here is my list of the 1,000 best things about Medicare. And frankly, I have to tell you that it might not be a full 1,000 yet. I tried, but I didn't come up with 1,000, and they're not in any real order either. It's more random thoughts, just like when Randy and I talk, it's kind of whatever happens to come to mind. But number one on my list, the first thing I thought of, not necessarily the most important, is that the good thing about Medicare is it's reasonably priced health insurance for people who would normally have to pay a whole lot more money for health insurance. And that's because health insurance for older people is more expensive than health insurance for younger people. Younger people don't use doctors. They're not typically as sick as older people get later in life. And therefore, Medicare actually brings down the cost of health insurance for those older people who are covered by Medicare so that it's more easy to afford for them. Number two out of the best 1,000 things about Medicare, there's no upper limit for the cost of outpatient treatment. There's no limit on how much Medicare is going to pay. If you are outpatient and you need to go to the doctor 8 times a day, and that happens all year long, they're not going to cut you off after some period of time or after some amount of money. It's a little different when you're in the hospital. Medicare Part A has some limits, and it is remotely possible for someone to stay in the hospital too often or too long and have and exceed their maximum. But the whole thing with outpatient treatment is that they'll keep paying their 80% as long as you keep having medical problems that are medically necessary and that Medicare is going to pay for. Number three in the list of 1,000 good things about Medicare, it also has coverage for younger people who are disabled. And that could be because of any number of things. ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, is one of them that's no question about. There are also many disabilities that cause people to collect Social Security Disability Income, SSDI. When they've collected that for 2 years, then they're automatically entitled to Medicare coverage no matter what their age. So that's one of the 1,000 good things about Medicare. Number four on my list, they have fairly generous hospital coverage. And I've mentioned that before. You can spend a lot of time in the hospital on Medicare. They're going to pay most of the cost. Now, at some point, they expect you to start sharing the cost, but that's where your Medicare supplement comes in to pick up that cost. And then you're, if you've bought a good Medicare supplement from the likes of Randy and I, you will have another 365 days of hospital stay paid for by your Medicare supplement after you've exhausted everything Medicare is going to pay for. So it's highly unusual that anybody is going to stay in the hospital and exhaust their Medicare benefits. Number five in the list of 1,000 things, Medicare doesn't cost very much. Medicare Part B for most average income people is going to cost this year $144.60 per month. To buy health insurance for that amount is almost impossible in the days of Obamacare. So Medicare, that's a good thing about Medicare in that, as I said earlier, Medicare is very affordable compared to what it would cost for people of older ages to buy medical insurance if Medicare didn't exist. Let's see, number six in the 1,000 things list. Medicare Advantage plans are funded exactly the way I think Medicare should have been funded from the very beginning back in the 1960s. Medicare Advantage plans basically involve the federal government giving a bunch of money to private insurance companies, and then they go out and design plans that allow them to turn a profit while giving, you know, a lot of benefits, theoretically, to their clients. It's not as big a huge bureaucracy full of warm bodies on, you know, unionized government pensions and wages, because all they're doing is giving money to a private company, in this case, many private companies, insurance companies. And that's the way Medicare should have been designed. They should have said, look, it costs older people 50% more to buy health insurance. We will defray a portion of that 50% cost so that the people can go to the insurance company and purchase a good quality product. That's the way it should have been done. So that's why I don't completely hate Medicare Advantage plans. I'm sort of jealous, even though my favorite plans are Medicare supplements. Number seven in the list of 1,000 things that are really good about Medicare. It has brought more people into the ranks of the insured. Before Medicare existed in the 1960s, I think it was something like 80% of the older people in society had no medical insurance. It was some large percentage like that. And now they tell me that it's somewhere in the order of 500,000 older American citizens that do not have medical coverage. I don't know why they don't, unless maybe they were out to lunch when it came time to enroll in Medicare, or they're just not in touch with paperwork or society or reality or something. But it was instrumental in bringing people into the ranks of the insured and helping to get them treatment when things go wrong, because they've got a way to pay for this, the illness or injury that they have suffered. Number eight on this list, it's evidence that a generous society is willing to help those who are unable to help themselves. And nobody can say that America isn't a generous country with people willing to assist those in need. The only thing is we have to do it through a government bureaucracy that siphons off so much money, probably costs twice as much to do it as if it were just given to private enterprise insurance companies to allow them to come up with the most effective way to give medical coverage to people. But, you know, that's a conversation for another day, I guess. Number nine in the list of 1,000 things that is really good about Medicare, it concentrates its limited funding on the most important types of medical treatment. It's a really good thing that Medicare doesn't pay for every little thing. They don't pay for dental insurance. They don't pay for hearing treatment unless it's the result of disease or accidental injury. And they don't pay for vision. Medicare pays for things that can kill you. And so if your dental problems are not being paid for, it's because they're not the result of injury or illness. They're just the result of decaying teeth. and you're going to have to pay the dentist on your own rather than rely on the taxpayers to do it. Number 10 on the list of 1,000 great things about Medicare, a wide variety of plans are available on the market from private insurance companies to supplement Medicare protection. When it's time for somebody to think about enrolling in Medicare and for them to think about buying a supplemental plan that's going to protect them against the gaps in coverage that Medicare embodies, there's a wide variety of plans for them to choose from. This is why people like Medicare for the Lazy Man have come into existence, to help people make up their minds as to what kind of supplemental plan would serve them the best. There are so many choices available that it's the kind of thing that scares a lot of people. And so we're here to help explain the options and guide them towards the light, as it were. Number 11 in my list of 1,000 things that are really good about Medicare, it brings older people into the insurance market. And that means that companies have spent more money on drugs and equipment and treatment designed for older people. Back when there were a lot of older people that did not have health insurance, couldn't pay for their own treatment, couldn't pay for their own drugs, there was not as much investment in the kinds of treatments that really benefited older people. But that has totally changed because the federal government insures older people. Older people go to the doctor, they need a drug, they need a procedure, they need a treatment. Companies are throwing money in the direction of perfecting treatments that are beneficial to older people. That would not have happened had Medicare not come along. Number 12 on my list of 1,000 good things about Medicare, it's brought wider scrutiny of the outcomes of medical treatment. For instance, hospital infection rates and readmissions of the same person for the same problem because the treatment was ineffective or they threw them out of the hospital before they were healed. Hospital rankings have become more important. There's been more scrutiny in the quality of medical treatment in various forms, and hospitals have then taken steps to increase their rankings relative to other hospitals so that their reputations were protected. Because if people in our free society have a choice, are we going to go to the hospital on the east side of town that has a lousy reputation, or the hospital on the west side of town that has a stellar reputation? So the hospitals are working hard all the time to increase their ratings relative to other hospitals. Number 13 on my list of 1,000 things that are really good about Medicare, the Social Security Administration and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have many, many thousands of union employees they would not otherwise have. Enough said about that. Number 14 on my list of 1,000 things that are good about Medicare, rural health facilities have much better funding because rural populations that have insurance, the people that have insurance, can help fund better treatment and better facilities. So without the insurability of people, say, in Appalachia, the health facilities there would be sorely lacking because there would be no insurance money reimbursing the doctors and the clinics and the hospitals that treat those people. Medicare came along and changed all that. Now, there would be a number 15 of my 1,000 things that are really good for Medicare, but I ran out of time. The clock moved much more quickly. So I thought to myself, well, Randy's going to have at least 15 or 20 things. So
I've got a list of about 57 things.
Okay. All right. That's a good start.
However, you're going to be seriously disappointed. We are out of time.
Jeez. So it's not just having to drop this right, in midair, which is obviously going to frustrate our audience. But how about all those people that assault you every time you go to Harold's?
I know. I'm going to share one best thing about Medicare again. This is number 15, and it's from a personal experience. I was recently using some Medicare resources, and I say from a personal perspective, I had no idea when I went in for this treatment as to what kind of expense I could potentially encounter. And it was huge. And if it hadn't been for Medicare being able to, you know, use that and take advantage of that, it would have been a much more stressful situation mentally. You know, I was going to get from point A to point B no matter what. But I'm a little bit Scottish and a little bit Irish, and I'm tight with a nickel. And if I would have been in the hospital knowing that I was going to end up having to cut myself a check to get out of here, I would have been much more stressed. And I don't think I would have nearly had the experience that I had when I knew that Medicare was there to help.
Well, that's a good thing. That would be number 17 or 18 on my list of good things. I would like to steal that because that's an excellent thing. It's nice to know that Medicare is there to make sure that you get proper treatment and that you can walk out of that hospital with most of your cash intact.
Well, there was that. And, you know, back in the day, you know, you kind of, if you had to, you would cut things short. Okay, yeah, I'll just bite on that leather strap while you cut off my leg. But yeah, I don't need any anesthesia.
Isn't that the way most of your uncles and other dentists in your family approach their patients?
This is an absolute true story, Doug. I know you think I'm kidding, but one of my uncles, who shall remain nameless, is long gone, but he was a dentist. And one of my cousins, I'll tell you who it was later, went to him to... Carsons have really bad problems with their teeth. We're just born that way. So anyway, long story short is he went into my uncle to get them all pulled out at one fell swoop. My uncle said, oh God, we can't do this all in one sitting. He goes, oh yeah, you're going to. And he says, give me, I'm not kidding, Doug. He says, give me that fifth of whiskey over there. And in between every four or five teeth got jerked out, he'd take a big swig of whiskey and they kept going.
Was that like, you know, Benjamin Carson, the pioneer from carrying a bag of apple seeds over his shoulder and a musket?
It would have been back in the 1930s.
Oh, boy. That's just the dawn of the modern age of dentistry. I think he missed it by a couple of years.
Yeah, it was a long day, but... literally, whenever I think about that story, I think of the other expression of in the mud, the blood, and the beer.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's a bar fight, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's in my family's case, it's also a dental visit.
And the results are the same. You walk out with a bloody mouth.
Yeah.
And maybe a little drunk.
Yeah, probably more than a little drunk. But, yeah, that's an absolute true story. Every uncle I ever had was a dentist, and some people might think that's a good idea. We'll talk about that later as a hanging chad.
Yes, let's do, because I want to find out why those people did not believe in giving their patients anesthesia.
Well, the common expression was, we're just about done.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then why bother?
That's right. We're just about done. Don't worry about it. Oh, yeah, I know it hurts, but we're just about done.
Oh, boy, that's a scary thought. Scary, scary. Well, thank you very much for adding that little twist to our list of 1,000 things that are really good about Medicare.
I mean that wholeheartedly. It really made my situation a much more palatable situation, and I didn't have to worry about it. Not that I would worry about it anyway, but it was just one more thing I didn't have to stew about.
You're not going to be happy when I announce the subject of an upcoming episode. It's going to be 1,000 things that are really bad about Medicare. So well, I'm hoping it doesn't burst your bubble.
I would have to really, in my experience so far, I would really have to think about it.
Well, good. Maybe there aren't as many bad things about Medicare, and we'll walk away from that episode in better spirits than I'm afraid we will. I'm looking forward. I always like to look on the bright side of things.
Yeah. I do too. Doug, we need to tell our audience thank you.
Thank you, audience.
Thank you for joining us. We know you could have been 100 different places, but we need to ask you to put your tray table in its upright and locked position, stow your personal belongings either in the upper bin or underneath the seat in front of you, and fasten your seatbelt. because you have just listened to about 32 and a half minutes with the anti-insurance insurance guy, Doug Jones, with MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Buy my book. Bye-bye.